in. Episode number 6, lucky number 6, however you want to look at it, here of the Suns podcast on Bright Side of the Sun. Chris Habas, as always, riding with co-pilot here with Jim Kochenour. We're going to break down the events of the past week. We've taken 6 episodes to develop podcast symmetry, and the Suns have taken 41 games to now get into their second head coach. So 6 podcasts, now 2 head coaches, something that's been talked about ad nauseum nationally, locally, covered amazingly on Bright Side of the Sun, obviously, as you probably already know. Today, we're going to talk about that, of course, but we're going to switch our focus primarily over to an extremely special guest that's going to give us some of his time out of this evening, and we definitely appreciate that. How are you holding up through this today, Jim?
I'm doing good. Yeah, we don't really have a whole lot of new stuff to cover this week, do we, Chris?
Yeah, I think between, when was the last game? Was that Thursday or Wednesday night? It was at U.S. Airways Center, where they played the Bucks, and, you know, the whole Buck stops here angle and all that fun stuff, because it stopped in a lot of ways. But after that game, I was at the arena the next day because of the Alvin Gentry stuff. I was at the arena the day after because of the Alvin Gentry stuff. And then finally on Sunday, when they had real practice and they had, you know, the coach named with Lindsey Hunter, I was back at the arena on Sunday and finally took a day off on Tuesday. I was there yesterday as well. So I was at U.S. Airways Center, long story short, from Thursday night of the final game, left there at about 11 or midnight, and then was there every single day up until today. And the only thing I missed today, apparently, was there was some kind of a shouting match with Jermaine O'Neal and Lance Blanks in regards to Monday at practice that I had missed. But sounds like it's been newsworthy for at least the past 5 days for the Suns, 5-6 days.
Yeah, there's been even a little bit of other stuff going on, and maybe we can touch on that later. But we had touched before on the fact that there might be some activity during this layoff, that they had some days off, so, you know, there could be a meeting of minds, and maybe they'd look at what direction they wanted to go and possibly some personnel moves, you know, player moves. But I don't think either one of us could have anticipated that it was going to be the firestorm of activity, you know, surrounding Gentry's departure that it had been.
Yeah, exactly. And one guy's take that I'm kind of interesting to get is our next guest. So let's go ahead and bring on, I'm not going to say who they are until we bring them on the line here, because it is, you know, it's we're definitely excited and thankful for the time that we're going to get from our special guest here. So let's go ahead and bring them up on the line.
Hello?
Hey, Channing?
Yeah.
Hey, it's Chris Habas over here with Bright Side of the Sun and SB Nation. How you doing tonight?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I got my podcast co-host, Jim Kochenour, on the line. Say hi, Jim.
Hey, Channing. How's it going?
Good. How you doing, man?
All right. So we're doing good over here. We wanted to kind of check in on you. We definitely appreciate the time of you jumping on here. I think you were saying on Twitter.
No problem.
Yeah, I think you were saying earlier on Twitter that you have a household of sick people over at the house right now. How's everyone doing?
Yeah. So, we just got some soup. But, yeah, I got time. No big deal.
So, I mean, this has been definitely an arduous and long Phoenix Suns season, but, you know, because you haven't been able to play due to the medical condition that you had gone through that you found out just before the season, sounds like you've been hitting the links and on the golf course for a while, right?
Yeah, no, I'm getting a little better, you know. I'm probably a consistent 96. You know, I have my good days and bad days, but it's just something mentally challenging that I could do where I don't kind of get my heart rate up too much unless I hit a couple bad shots, but yeah, I got to stay active somehow, and that's about the only active thing I can do. So, you know, I'm just trying to do the best I can.
Where do you play out there from, Channing? Do you play from the
No, God, I play from the white tees, man. Are you crazy? Those black tees, that's a whole different beast altogether. So I'm going to have to get below my game below the 80s from the white, and then I'll move on to the black ones.
Are you playing?
I usually play next to back, but I'm happy if I break 90. If I'm south of 90, then that's usually a pretty good day for me.
Yeah. I'm getting there. I just gotta kind of fix one or two little things, and if I can be more consistent with my driver, I'd be awesome.
Are you a slicer or a hooker? You play the draw or the fade?
Draw, dude. It can either be really nice. It can be a nice soft draw, or it could be a absolute dog leg left. So, it's better than going right. So we just got to keep figuring out how to aim.
Yeah, and one of the things that with golf is, like you said, it's something where you can mentally kind of focus. And as you're out there on the golf course and mentally focused, and I mean, how has that been like, not being able to get on the basketball court, play with your teammates, but you've been able to keep yourself active and keep yourself busy out there.
It's been tough, man. You know, you always want to get out there and be a part of that camaraderie. And, you know, regardless of wins or losses, I appreciate the experience with all the new guys. Especially since I've been with the Suns, I really keep in contact with a lot of those guys. I still keep in contact, you know, here and there with Robin, with Grant, with Steve. Of course, JD and I are really close. And so, you know, those old school guys we really stay in contact with. And, we really just, in the years past have really had a family relationship. So just going out there on the quote-unquote battlefield with the guys is really teaches us to be a family.
And you've been...
Now, has not being able to be out there with the new guys this year in that respect, Channing, kind of prevented you from building some of those same types of relationships with a couple of the new additions?
Yes and no. I think you look at the... kind of the turnover of our team. And I think, you know, this year for me, I think, I don't know how many new guys we had compared to last year and the year before that. So every year there's new guys. So this year I kind of just wanted to be a spectator and kind of wanted to, you know, just say hello and let everybody know I was there. But, you know, I knew I wasn't going to be playing this year. So I kind of just wanted to give my space and just kind of see people, you know, from a different perspective. And, you know, if they're there next year when I'm there, then, hey, we're going to get after it.
And the situation was to be reassessed in December, which already came by. So basically, like you said, and that we originally thought that it was going to be an entire season, that December was kind of wishful thinking. So at this point, it's the rest of the season we're sitting out and then going to reevaluate it for next year?
I think I'm pretty much getting reevaluated in March. And then the way they caught it, I think the usual will be every 90 days. So, it's been, 6 months, and that's pretty, I would say that's probably the medium mark. You know, if I come back in March, that's really awesome. To think in December, that would have been, off the charts great. But, even if I get cleared in March, I would not play this year. I'm super out of shape. I haven't played. I think people forget I had shoulder surgery. So literally I haven't played against anyone for a year. So, this summer's going to be huge for me, and just getting my legs back and getting my, you get that level of thickness on your skin from getting elbowed and getting hit. And right now I'm pretty mushy.
So Channing, with not being around the team as much this year in terms of the on the court stuff, I'm assuming you still kind of been around the coaching staff to a certain degree. What is your take on the current situation with the coaching staff? And also, I know you've had a close relationship with Alvin Gentry in the past. And so what specifically how would you characterize your relationship with Alvin?
Well, I mean, Alvin was the guy who really gave me my chance, man. He was... the second longest coach I've ever had in my life, next to Lute Olson. And I think, everyone can see the growth that I've had over the years, developing into a player. He was always honest with me, and he made me better every day. And it was sad to see him go. And, I'm extremely loyal to him. And, I had heard about him from other guys around the league. And when it came to me being a free agent, he was the first guy that called me and said, hey, if you give me a chance to make you better, I will. Just give me a chance to show everybody who you are, that I know you are. And so that really stuck with me. And, but this league's about business. And, I'll be honest, I really don't know a lot about Lindsey other than, I played against him a couple times. And, I see him around the gym, when I'm there. But I guess before this, his role was a little less than the other guy. So, again, this is just one of those weird years where, I'm not around and, he's around more, the guards and stuff like that. So, hey, I wish him the best. And, when I get back next year, we'll see what's up.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people in respect to your development as a player, kind of forgot how good you had become well-rounded last year in terms of, you know, becoming a better rebounder and a defender. Because a lot of the talk when Alvin Gentry left was, oh, well, Channing Frye better look for a new team because he's not going to have a role with this team. What do you have to say to people that make those kind of comments, and also talk about your growth as a player last year? Because I think before the injury, you were playing at probably the highest level of your career.
Right. I think people who say that need to check their stats and see how much better people play when I'm out there on the court. You know, what I do is something different that not a lot of guys do in the league. And, you know, I think the biggest criticism is, you know, why don't you post up? Well, if I post up, why don't you tell Gortat to shoot threes? So, you know, I mean, for me, you know, I kind of like, you know, if you're a basketball player or if you know something about basketball more than just as a regular fan, you know, I definitely am open for criticism and constructive, you know, constructive, like advice. I'm definitely down with that. But for people to be like, well, Channing needs to find a new team and a new coach, I think you look at the guys on our team, and I think hearing from their mouths, you know, how I can help the team not only win, but for me to help players be the best that they can be by creating space for them, it's just kind of something I just take and kind of laugh. But, you know, sometimes it irks me. But other than that, I'm really just, it means more for my teammates that they're like, hey, man, you know, we miss you out there. You know what I'm saying? So for me, I just got to continue to do what I do. And again, I got to grow on what I'm becoming. And, you know, it's not going to be like, hey, I'm not going to become Tim Duncan over the course of a year. But, you know, if I could be more efficient in other areas. But at this point in my career, look, what I do is I space the floor. I make threes. I'm going to get you a block a game. I'm going to get you 7-8 rebounds a game. And, you know, let's say 10, 12 points, you know, if we're playing in a fast-paced game. But, you know, for me, it's just creating opportunities for other players and playing the game as a skilled big man and doing the right thing every single day.
Yeah, and you spoke to me at practice the other day about the chemistry you developed with Jared Dudley, and you mentioned Marcin Gortat with being a stretch four and being able to make the right decisions and be able to space the floor. You mentioned your teammates talk to you about what they miss out of you out on the court. It just, you know, straight from you, from your perspective, I mean, what do you feel you could be bringing to this team? I mean, they're 13-28. There's a lot more than just, you know, your abilities on the court coming back to make this a championship team. But what do you feel that you could bring to this team that maybe you could help them out?
Well, you know what, again, I think it just comes down to floor space. I think if on offense, if people go into the game knowing or having less variables, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, on all cylinders, when we went to the Western Conference Final, there was no question on offense what each player had to do for their team to be successful. I think, you know, defensively, we're always making adjustments, and that's going to happen during the course of the game. But for me, you know, usually playing on the right side of Steve because he liked to go left, a lot like Goran. When Amari would roll, I knew that there was one guy that had to play JD and I, or Jay Rich and I, or Leandro and I, or whoever it is to my right-hand side. So I knew if a guy picked me up, it was immediate pass to the right, and that guy was going to make the right play. And so on offense, knowing what's going to happen and letting the defense dictate to you who gets the shots is something that I can create for any team. And I think not just only in pick and rolls, but in one-on-one situation, look at a guy like Beasley, Scola, you know, Goran, you look at, you know, Gortat rolling through the hoop, and guys that are creators, Shannon Brown. So you look at those guys and the spacing that they need to create and to make plays, having a guy out there, especially having two big guys in the lane, makes the shots harder. Having one, it makes it a little less hard. You know, I'm not saying, you know, Dwight Howard or DeAndre Jordan or Tim Duncan are down there. It's not easy, but, you know, having them think, oh, man, am I going to leave the block for shot or am I going to stay at home on Channing? So, you know, I think that's what I can bring. But, again, it's every year is different, and so, you know, I'd worked really hard this summer on just, again, being more efficient in the post. You know, I'm not going to go down there every single time, but, you know, when I have opportunities, I definitely should. And being able to put it on the floor once or twice is something that I'm going to have to continue to work on. And, you know, on defense, I think just for me to be in the right spot, you know, I'm not always going to block it, but if I could be in the right spot and be an example of where to be weak side and communicate, that's something I could definitely bring to score.
Yeah, I appreciate what you brought to the court. Like you had mentioned there, the floor spacing, I think that's something the Suns are really missing this year. The Suns, I believe, are 28th in the league in three-point field goal percentage. So having you out there from that aspect would definitely be helpful. I've missed some of those Fry games where, you know, you would offer four or five three-pointers and, you know, kind of give the Suns the push they needed there. But also, like you had mentioned, you're rebounding, and you were also very improved as a post defender. And I think that Gentry had a real clear idea of how he wanted to use you this season. But speaking of Gentry, he was talking today about Robert Sarver and saying some very very nice things about Robert, that you know, he wanted to do everything possible to win, and that he really cared a lot about the players and their families and the staff. What's your relationship like with Robert Sarver?
You know what? I have a really good relationship with Robert. He's a really good guy, man. I think sometimes he gets a bad rap. I think, you know, it's easy to, you know, go to the top and criticize everything that's going on. You know, but I think you look at Rob and you say, like, man, this guy really wants to win. You know, this has been by far the best experience I've had in the NBA. And, you know, I think, hey, everybody goes through ups and downs, and, you know, we make mistakes and we work through them. I think there's just, I think, you know, we're so used to winning all the time at such a high level, you know, and, you know, it happens to every team. I mean, so it's not that we're not good. It's just that we're having a down year. You know what I'm saying? We're having a down couple of years, you know, not making the playoffs, missing it by a game. We've had some injuries that hurt us, you know, and now we're changing kind of regimes with Steve not being here. We're really trying to refine our identity. So I don't know if it's so much Robert, but I would definitely say that he definitely has the Suns' best interest at heart. I think, you know, he at heart wants the guys to be happy, and he wants to win, and he wants to do things the right way.
In relation to the rest of the front office, I think guys like Lon Babbie and Lance Blanks catch a lot of flack in public just because it's easy to do that when a team is losing, but what are the strengths and some of the things that you get to see from the inside, not from the outside looking in? You're on the inside. What are some of the strengths of guys like Lon Babbie and Lance Blanks that you think that they don't get enough credit for?
I think it's just a tough situation. And, you know, I really... It's just a tough situation for them, and, you know, they're trying to do the best that they can.
Here's an easier one for you, Channing. The first that Lon met me in person, he had already read some of my writing over at Brightside, and he had already given me the moniker Mr. Negativity. That's how he, when I was introduced to him, he said, "Oh, I know who you are. You're Mr. Negativity." Now, has he given you any kind of special title or designation?
You know, we keep it very short between each other. You know, hey, it's my job to go out there and try to win games, and it's his job to make sure he's putting the right people out there on the court. So, you know, I think, you know, our conversations have been short, and it's not saying anything of our relationship. It's just more, he's just different. He's a business guy, and, you know, he's a numbers guy, and he's very different than Steve Kerr, and so... You know, it's just, I had a previous relationship with Steve, and so, you know, it's just been different. And so it's not saying it's better or worse, it's just different.
Yeah, different relationships for sure with different guys, and you've been spending a lot of time off the court, so you get a chance to see things from different perspectives. And one thing that I think you're actually shining on, and I don't mean to be over complimentary, but seeing you on the post game and the pregame shows wrapping up for the Suns, any future in that kind of a position, maybe doing commentary or analysis? You see yourself as a TV guy?
You know what? I like it a lot, but this is the thing. I kind of had a conflict of interest because I am in the locker room, and I am so fresh out the box, you know, this year. You know, I can basically call plays out that the other team, that our team is doing, and I think that's just, it's not a challenge. You know, I love being able to use my own basketball knowledge to maybe assess the game, but, you know, since I already know what's going on, it's just like, I don't want to show up anybody, or nor do I want to give away you know, game plans or anything like that. So I did it a lot. I wanted to see if I like it. I love it. Would I do it afterwards completely? But I don't know this year how many times I'm going to go on. I'm trying to kind of separate myself a little bit from the team in that standpoint, not from, like, you know, from my understanding what they're trying to do every game standpoint, so that when I do the announcing or the after the pregame, after game show, that it's from my personal opinion, not like these are facts.
Yeah, you can slide in right now, I would think, because it's, I mean, Lindsey Hunter's taking over. You might not know what's going to happen on the court then.
Well, exactly. And that's another thing. It's like, you know, hey, my opinion may not be the best opinion for the Suns, and so I don't want to get in trouble too much for being too honest. And that's one thing with you guys. I think everybody knows, man. I'm pretty honest, man, and sometimes that kind of gets me in a little bit of trouble. But I try to be as honest as possible and make sure that people know, you know, when I say something, man, I'm not just saying it to be, you know, just some cliche thing. This is actually what I feel, and you know, where it's come from, a place of love, not from a place of hate, you know.
Well, if you want to help out with some broadcasts from outside the locker room, that kind of perspective, maybe you could just go down south a little bit to U of A and a bit. I'm sure.
You know what? I would be so, gosh, I wish I had better. I didn't have a brain fart. I would be so pro U of A. It would be ridiculous, man. I'd be like, okay, well, U of A is going to win. Who are they playing? The 93 Bulls? Yeah, they'll win. So it's like, you know, I'm extremely loyal, man. And I love U of A like I love St. Mary's, like I love the Suns, man. And I really do love the Suns. And, you know, it kind of hurts that we're not being successful this year, but I continue to have hope in the guys in that locker room that, you know, we're going to turn things around and that we're going to figure out a way to win and what our identity is and what it takes to win every single night, you know?
Yeah, and you know what, vicariously, you have one team, like you said, that you love, the Suns, that are not exactly having their best season, but I mean, 16-1, the U of A Wildcats having one of their better seasons. They just lost to Oregon about a week ago or so, and now they're going to be hosting UCLA here in a couple of days. I mean, what do you think about this U of A team? Final Four, championship? What do you think?
You know what? I'm going to say Final Four. I think because they have such – I think you look at their team, not only are they talented, but they are so young that they buy into what Sean Miller is selling, you know, everything. Full bore, you know, do they go – that's a Coach O thing, but, you know, full bore do they go – into whatever he wants them to do. You know, if they're supposed to show on a screen, they all do it no matter what. No excuses. And hi, Bubba. Sorry, my son ran in for you. All clean? Okay, go eat your soup. Yeah, I know you're here. Yeah, wash your hair. Okay, go eat soup. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no problem. So, can you talk a little bit about – can you talk – are you there?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, so, yeah, so, I mean, you look at guys like Brandon Ashley last game, who, if you look on the stat sheet, he did okay. But if you would have watched the game, you would have said he and Mark Lyons were the two out of three most impressive guys there. You know, Mark Lyons does a great job. He's exactly what the Cats needed this year, was that gritty leader. When you need a big bucket, he's going to get it. And then you have the perimeter defender of Nick Johnson. And he has done a great job of making it miserable for every really good opposing guard. And then you go to Brandon Ashley, who basically guards whoever on the court and locks them down and does a great job of just continuing to be, use his length and his athleticism. And he just has a way about him where he lets the game come to him, but he's dominating on defense.
You're auditioning for the pre- and post-game feed on the Wildcats right there, Channing.
You know, hey, you know, I do what I do, man. I'm just being honest, man. You know, the score is one thing, but to see the guys play like that, and when they come off the bench, I look at a lot of things, and they come off the bench, you're just mad that they're not in the game, and that's what you want. You know, you want guys like, man, I wish I was back out there. But then they cheer for their, you know, for their teammates, and those are things that really shows a team. So it's been awesome.
Can you talk a little bit about, because it's not as nationally acclaimed as a North Carolina Duke, but you're very active whenever ASU is playing U of A on Twitter and socially, no matter what the sport is. Can you talk about that rivalry after living through it?
Well, the rivalry stems from a long time ago when the people at ASU told me I wasn't good enough to go there And 2 months later, I got a letter from U of A and handwritten letter from Coach Olson. Took a visit and committed halfway, about 6 months later than that. So for me, it was just like, you know, hey, I had really thought about going to ASU before I even thought about going to U of A. And maybe I'm a little bitter, and I just felt like, you know, hey, I had looked at their school. You know, I felt like, hey, you know, this is at home. They had some good players on their team at the time, but, you know, U of A really made me who I am. And you know, it's a good rivalry, sort of. I mean, if you think, like, whooping them all the time is good. But, you know, for me, it's just fun to be at home and to be able to watch these games. And, you know, they have a couple good players on their teams. But, you know, again, it's that loyalty thing, man. It's like, you know, Suns versus Lakers. No matter what team I'm on, I'm always going to root for the Suns, unless I'm on the Lakers. But still, you know, it's just one of those things. It's a great rivalry. You know, I really don't like that, you know, when we win in basketball, they're like, hey, let's play football. But it's like, okay, well, let's go play baseball, or let's swim, or let's play softball, or let's do everything else. You know, hey, you won 1 year. You know, I think let's look over the big numbers and see who won more often. So, you know, I just wish you know, some fans would be full-time ASU fans and not half-the-time ASU fans.
Yeah, I can completely agree with that in that respect. So just a kind of a last question for me, because I'll let you get out of there and get back to taking care of the house of sick, as I always call it when I got all my kids sick at home.
Yeah.
But I know it's a new regime. I know Lindsey Hunter's a guy that you haven't coached for, but you know, as recently as 2 years ago, played against. What do you expect out of this group, out of the Suns, out of friends of yours like Jared Dudley for the last 41 games of the season? Like, what are your expectations for this team?
Well, you know what? For the guys that I know that I've had previous relationships with, and this is not against anybody else, I know the guys there are all going to be professionals, and they're all going to go out there and win or try to win as much as they can and do the right thing. I think, you know, when you have a new coach, then everybody feels like they have a chance to go and make, you know, make a case for themselves. So I think what I can expect is you're going to see a lot of guys playing, and it's going to be, you know, you're just going to see guys playing hard. Everyone, it's just, you know, I don't know his style. I don't know, you know, what is he going to change it up? He's going to keep it, you know. So I'm watching as intrigued as everyone else is about what this, you know, what's going to happen. And I'm just learning, you know, want to see what his style is, what kind of decisions he makes at the end of games, and how the guys respond to him.
Okay, Channing. Well, thanks a lot for joining us. Chris and I wanted to thank you, all of the people out on Brightside listening to this. Want to thank you and appreciate everything you've done for the team. And we wish you well with the heart condition, and look forward to seeing you back in the Suns uniform sooner rather than later.
Man, thank you, man. Yes, I cannot wait, man. You know, I miss being up there, and, you know, whether you write this down or not, I really do appreciate the support everyone's giving me this year, man. It means a lot. You know, it's been making me, you know, miss it even more just being out there, whether you boo me or not. You know what I'm saying? It's been awesome.
Well, you know, Channing, you have a big following because of your days playing for the Wildcats here, but also from your time in Portland. We still have people checking in on a regular basis that are still following your career here and still touching and checking in on you. So
yeah,
it says
that is awesome.
You that you've made that kind of mark on the people that they still are keeping tabs on you after this time. So,
well, thank you, man. I appreciate the interview.
All right, Channing. Well, I'll catch you later, and I appreciate the time, man. Have a good rest of your day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Catch you later.
All right, that was Channing Frye of the Phoenix Suns jumping on with us. Again, super appreciative of the time. I mean, he's got a lot of stuff going on, obviously, with the medical condition. And then, you know, being able to take the year off to spend time with family. I mean, Jim, you have a family. I have a family. I mean, to be able to take a year off of work while your work is supporting you, to be able to get yourself healthy and be able to spend time with your family, it's about as invaluable as it gets.
Yeah, you know, he was busy there. He was busy with soup. He did for us there. You know, the kids are coming. They're like, Dad, I'm hungry. And, you know, he's multitasking, managing through that. And so, yeah, that was great for him to join us, interrupting his dinner and give us some perspective.
Yeah, and you know, he's been spending some time at the practices. He's been at the games on the sideline and stuff. So the great thing is, I mean, as Lon Bavy kind of joked about it at the press conference when they announced the unfortunate condition, is that he's still an employee. You know, he's still going to be here. He's rehabbing from shoulder surgery, so he's going to be around. And it's been pretty awesome to see him at practice working with the guys, you know, getting up shots, even if it's as tedious as just shooting around with guys after practice and talking to him. The fact that there are 9 new players, and like he said, he's got built-in relationships with a couple of guys, but there's 9 new guys on this team, and you know, he's hopefully going to be a major part of it next year. So you got to build a little bit of that camaraderie, get to know these guys, feel them out personality wise even if it's not on the court. So he's been out there at practice, he's been out there at home games a lot, you know, catching him out on TV obviously and doing some TV work about him. He's learning the ins and outs. I mean, he's basically being able to spend a year looking at the game from a coach's perspective, a TV analyst's perspective, a fan. You know, he's being able to look at the game from multi different layers and levels, which again, another invaluable thing that hopefully just continues to build him up as a player.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, a couple of the things we spoke about with Channing, I don't think we're going to be able to evade talking about this. This is probably the central focus of our podcast, after the star guest appearance. Channing talked about Alvin Gentry and obviously his relationship with Gentry, the longstanding relationship and the very solid ties he had there. And then when we asked him about the front office, and not to put any words in Channing's mouth at all, he didn't seem to have much to say in terms of there, like there wasn't as much of a relationship. And this ties in obviously to the activities of the last week. And so we should probably go over that timeline. And maybe if you want to start, because like you had said, you were down there, you had a sleeping bag with you and a pillow, you were sleeping in the press room, waiting for the next news to break. So how did the timeline kind of break down for you this past week with the coaching change?
All right. So basically the timeline with what had happened was obviously the Bucks lost on Thursday. They lose by 4 to Milwaukee after digging out of a 10-point hole to give themselves a 10-point hole. You know, same old story, same song and dance. Suns lose again, 13-28 on the season. After the game, just kind of an eerie vibe in general. We go into the post-game press conference, and Alvin Gentry gives a real quick, like, minute and a half long, you know, this is my assessment of the game, which usually for him is about 3 to 4 minutes. And then he fielded 2 questions, maybe 3. But, you know, Dave was there as well with me, and he fielded 2 quick questions, one from me, one from Arizona Sports. And I think the third question, he was just like, I'm done with this, and immediately went to his office afterwards. Didn't even, usually I walk with him, either Coro grabs him or I grab him, Paul Coro of the Arizona Republic. We either grab him and we'll just talk off the record about stuff that we saw that we didn't really feel like talking about in a press conference. But he didn't do that and went straight to his office, you know, shut the door. Apparently they had a sit down after the game where they talked for a little while between the managing minds. You know, all the minds met between Robert Sarver, the owner, Lon Bavy, Lance Blanks, and Alvin Gentry. That meeting didn't really make the decision, but they just met in general. And then Friday morning they came together. They met, which was supposed to be an off day in general. They met together, and that's when the news came out that they came to a mutual agreement. Now, as we've all learned since then, you know, whether it's sour grapes or not, Alvin Gentry came out today and said it was not mutual. It was, we do not need your services anymore. We're going to go ahead and go in a different direction. But so that ended the Alvin Gentry era was Friday morning. And then it was nothing on Friday. You know, they didn't name a head coach. They just sent out the release, had a quick press conference with Lon Bavy, which if anyone got a chance to check that out, I know I'm talking a lot right now, but that Lon Bavy press conference was a lot about nothing. He really didn't answer any questions when he was asked direct questions that needed to be answered. He said this wasn't the time and place for it, but all the questions were surrounding Alvin Gentry's departure, and that's kind of what that press conference was titled, Alvin Gentry's Departure. We're going to go ahead and answer your question. So we didn't get much out of that press conference. Saturday rolls around, and we get nothing again. So we're now sitting 2 straight days without a head coach. Sunday, they finally announced Lindsey Hunter, that we've all been, you know, knowing that it was going to be Lindsey Hunter. He holds his first practice, has a quick little presser with everybody. You know, Monday, another practice where we met with everybody and we talked again. And then today, this is where we're at here on Tuesday, where we have no Dan Majerle. He said he's not going to be involved with the Suns anymore. And Elson Turner has not made a decision yet. So basically between a Thursday loss and a Sunday morning, nothing happened with the Suns other than letting go of their head coach, mulling over the decision to hire Lindsey Hunter after it was leaked immediately that it was going to be him, and now they're two assistants short on a plane to Sacramento right now.
Okay. And with some of this stuff, there's even been more news around this, and not all of it can necessarily be verified one way or the other. As you had already alluded to, Gentry and the Suns seem to characterize the parting in different ways. You know, I don't know either side very well, but from what I know of Gentry, you know, he doesn't seem like the type of person that would be deceitful, disingenuous. And so if he's saying that the Suns basically told him, we no longer require your services, I'm inclined to believe that's probably the way it happened. You know, you go past that further, and there have been some people out there reporting that people had known about Lindsey Hunter ascending into Gentry's position for a long time now, not just in the last couple of days. So there's been that out there. There's been stuff about Lindsey Hunter and the mortgage fraud situation, which Seth Pollock posted a story about this morning, and a bunch of the local media ran with it. Seth said that he had confirmed with the attorney in the case that it was still ongoing, and there's been some, you know, hazy details that some people have tried to confirm with the FBI, and so some people aren't necessarily sure of the validity of whether that is ongoing or not. We have the Jermaine O'Neal incident with Lance Blanks, where they were involved in some kind of yelling, loud confrontation laced with expletives. You know, all of that happened. And so we have Dan Majerle, like you had said, now is no longer with the team. Alston Turner seems to be kind of on the fence. Obviously, they weren't happy with the way that this went down. And the thing at the crux of all of this is obviously the decision to make Lindsey Hunter the interim head coach. Because, you know, letting go of Gentry, if they would have instituted Majerle or Turner as the interim, then the rest of this stuff wouldn't have played out. There would be no mortgage fraud story. There would be no Jermaine O'Neal and Lance Blanks coming to blows. There would be, you know, none of this other stuff on you know, no Dan Majerle leaving the franchise. And so I'm not sure what exactly Blanks and Babby thought they were going to gain by putting Hunter in this position. Because right now what's out there, you know, nationally and locally, is that the Suns are just a grease fire. You know, the court of public opinion, they don't need some kind of full disclosure from all parties in order to cast a verdict. So it doesn't matter what might have been true on, you know, behind closed doors or he said, she said. Cases like this, the perception is going to be what's most important. It's going to be more important than reality. It's going to be more important than the truth lots of times. And right now the perception, the overriding perception is that the Suns have been sucked into some kind of calamitous vortex, and the entire franchise is just in disarray.
Yeah, and that's the nicest, easiest way to put it. And aside from the lion or the tiger jumping through the flaming hoop as the guy in the creepy tracksuit waves it around the air, this is a three-ring circus. And like you mentioned, it's been called a lot of different things, but essentially it's a three-ring circus, and it's just a lot of things happening that didn't need to happen. And I think a lot of it came down to the domino of Alvin Gentry is one of the most liked guys in the NBA, whether it's in Arizona circles, whether it's in Detroit circles or LA circles, you know, the areas that he played. He's just liked around the league. It's everyone loves Alvin Gentry. And so losing him, you already lost the court of public opinion. It's immediately gone. There doesn't need to be a Lindsey Hunter story. That just was icing on the cake. There doesn't need to be a Jermaine O'Neal story. That's just even more icing on the cake. There doesn't need to be any of this. But just everything that they're doing is perpetuating the story even more. You know, the Lon Babby press conference didn't help because it really didn't answer very many questions for people. And, you know, just talking to, you know, the folks in the media after that press conference was over, everyone was very just unsatisfied. Just nobody, they came out of that and they go, wait, what did we get answered here? All we know is that Alvin Gentry's gone and they don't know what they're doing next. That's basically the overriding theme of 16 minutes of talking to, you know, the media, if you want to call it talking. That's a very loose term there that he spoke to us. But, you know, in terms of all of this, I spoke to a source within the Suns, and they said that they wanted Lance Blanks to be the voice of this Lindsey Hunter thing. And you know, he's the guy that is basically ascending Lindsey Hunter to the head coaching job. This is his to give, which is going to make people speculate. You know, I asked directly to Lance Blanks. I said, hey, how long have you known Lindsey Hunter? Is this something where it's, you know, do you guys have a relationship? He said they met 2 years ago, and they have a business relationship since the beginning of this year when they had the opportunity, as he described it, to bring him on as the head of player development over him becoming an assistant with either Portland or Orlando, who were both interested in him as an assistant after he didn't get the Orlando job. So, I mean, the speculation is going to be out there that Lance brought in Hunter to a made-up position of head of player development as the coach in waiting, and it just happened to be 41 games earlier than they originally planned, and they had to just kind of stick him in this spot, and it was something that they weren't expecting to do right away. That's fine. That's going to be the overriding speculation, but I think at the end of the day, what I got out of this is this was kind of a Lance Blanks decision. I can't confirm or deny that. Lance Blanks didn't say that out of his mouth, but from the source I spoke to with the Suns, they said that he's the voice of this decision, basically, and, you know, Lindsey Hunter is the Suns' interim for 41 games, and he may be a coaching genius. He may be the next Doc Rivers, but at the end of the day, we don't know, and he's stepping into a grease fire barefoot, blindfolded, you know, hands tied behind his back, gauze in his mouth. He's stepping into this with almost nothing to gain from it. So these next 41 games, I mean, the three-wing circus isn't going to stop. This is going to keep parading on through the NBA on the road and at home for the next 41 games.
Yeah, so that's what I can't quite figure out. Now, I agree with you, and Gentry has a lot more credibility than anyone within the Suns organization. And, you know, that's another thing that kind of speaks to where the state of the franchise is that the coach that just got fired has, you know, the most respect and credibility in NBA circles more than anybody remaining on the team he just got fired from. Because if you look at the Suns from top to bottom, if you look at the owner and the front office and now the coaching staff and the players, there isn't anybody on this team at any level that other teams around the NBA are trying to emulate, that they're like, oh yeah, we want to be like them. So the Suns have just fallen off the map in terms of that. And I still can't figure out exactly what they or Blanks or whoever is pulling the puppet strings here is trying to accomplish with this Lindsey Hunter appointment, because, you know, I don't know if maybe Blanks and Hunter are actually like distant cousins, they're related, this is some form of nepotism. But before the season, you know, so, you know, Hunter, back when they started this, he was given a sinecure, this, like, basically fabricated job with little to no responsibility. He's the head of player development. He has no prior coaching experience, anything like this. And now you're putting him in this head coaching spot. And, I mean, you're not fooling the players on the team. They know that this guy hasn't put his time in. He hasn't earned this. So it was given to him. And players know that, and people know that. But, you know, I don't understand what the end game is here, what this accomplishes. You know, all they're doing is creating bad publicity for themselves. And even if Hunter is their guy, then wouldn't it have just been easier to say, hey, Dan or Elston, you take over for Gentry. Now we've gotten rid of Gentry. Now we'll give you the interim coaching job. The team's going to win 20 games. So we'll get our number one pick. And then after the season, Hunter's our man. Then we'll institute him. I don't understand what they gain by doing it the way they have. So maybe you can educate me on that.
They gain nothing. I mean, the worst case scenario is playing out right now, and then would be maybe another 13-28 or 10 and whatever to end the season. And, you know, this end up being historically one of the bottom two or three seasons the Suns have ever had. I mean, that's the worst case scenario. And Hunter kind of proves that he's out of his league, as you mentioned, with no coaching experience. I mean, we never obviously wish anyone bad luck. We want Lindsey Hunter, Lon Babbie, and Lance Blanks to be the reincarnates of the San Antonio crew and create a dynasty here. That's what everybody wants. But at the end of the day, Hunter doesn't have any experience, so it doesn't make you look at this in a positive light and go, oh, Lindsey Hunter's here. He's going to take us to the next level. We're going to be 500 in the season, or we're going to get a number one pick, and he's going to ride us off into the sunset. I mean, he doesn't have any experience. We're just being realistic here. So, I mean, with Lindsey Hunter, they don't gain much. I mean, if you name Dan Marley, I don't think he's a head coach in this league. Not a knock on Dan. I just think that he's put in a handful of years, but I don't think he was quite ready. So he would have been more of like a fan favorite. Hey, we're giving you Dan Marley. go ahead and get your butts in the seats. We're going to have retro jerseys. Dan's going to coach the crew. We're going to try really hard and enjoy your top five pick. That's what they would have gotten out of Dan. Out of Elson, that's just promoting your lead assistant, like the Bucks did, like the Nets did. Like every team that fires or lets go their head coach, they promote the lead assistant. So that's what you get out of Elston. Even Corey Gaines is a guy who's coached in the WNBA for years, is a Paul Westhead, you know, branch off of the tree of Paul Westhead. He's a guy that has tons of experience. Who cares if it's WNBA or what level it's on? He's head coached a lot of places. He's now an assistant with the Suns. So pretty much everyone on the staff, you can kind of point at them and go, make sense, make sense, make sense. Then you have Lindsey Hunter that gets the job. He kind of walks out of the background and, you know, shoulders past everybody and goes, hey, you know, I'll take it. And he's the guy that gets it, and it doesn't make sense. Even Igor Kokoslov, the longtime Gentry assistant, would have made a ton of sense to be the head coach on this team. He's won European championships. He's been an assistant on an NBA championship team with Detroit, where he was with Lindsey Hunter, ironically. And he's not even given the job. So they gain nothing out of adding Hunter. And the only thing they gain out of it is they keep him from going to another place. It would be like if the Cardinals fired Wisenhunt and hired Ray Horton to prevent him from going to be a head coach somewhere else. Well, guess what? Ray Horton did not become a head coach somewhere else, and high tide, Lindsey Hunter probably wouldn't have became a head coach somewhere else. And there's other coaches on the tree to pluck from. There's numerous guys without a job and numerous assistants with a lot of experience. The Suns, in hindsight, could have done a lot better, but I don't think we have enough room in hindsight to say that Lindsey Hunter's not a good choice yet. He just doesn't have any experience, so he's going to get criticized until he proves that he can do this job.
Yeah, and so I think that's where the Suns leave themselves open to a lot of criticism in this situation, because it sounds like you're basically in the same position I am, in the same position pretty much everybody is they're just bewildered, because this doesn't make sense. The you know, them naming Hunter the new coach, you know, the series of moves that we've talked about here, and you had talked about, you know, alluded to San Antonio, you referenced them. None of these feel like dynasty moves. This doesn't feel like we're building some strong foundation here. This just seems like we just are completely lost in the wilderness. So, yeah. You know, any other number of scenarios, you know, even if they, you know, planned this and said, well, we're going to put Hunter in this position because then we think we'll piss Marley off and Turner off enough so that they'll leave, because we want to just empty the coaching staff without having to actually, you know, fire these guys, fire Dan Marley. It would have been just as easy to name Marley the interim, and then at the end of the season when he didn't win any games, say, hey, it hasn't worked out for, you know, Dan Marley, so we're going to move in another direction, and we're going to hire a new head coach, and he's going to bring in his own assistants. And then, you know, you avoid it that way. And, like, Lindsey Hunter didn't have a bunch of NBA teams that were on speed dial that, you know, he had on hold on the other line while he was waiting to see if the Suns were going to promote him. So none of this makes sense. And it's obvious, you know, Hunter, even today, you know, they're asking him about what was going on with the O'Neal situation, and he isn't even groomed enough, doesn't have enough pedigree to even be able to handle the media, because it's already been reported that, you know, after this argument, that O'Neal has some kind of undisclosed physical condition that's preventing him from traveling with the team. And here you have Hunter saying, oh, I have no idea what's wrong with him medically. He's not getting on the, you know, he's not getting on the plane now, but I have no idea what's going on. I mean, what kind of head coach isn't going to know what's going on with their players and whether or not they're traveling with the team? I mean, that doesn't make sense. He's not even handling, you know, an easy situation that an experienced coach would navigate through with ease.
Yeah, and the one thing that I'll say with that, just a small little defense, because you know me, I'm that fence straddler that looks at things extremely neutrally, but the one thing that I'll give in defense of that is every time I've ever asked a coach about an injury, they either give you the most generic answer or say, talk to our medical staff. But the one thing that he should know is that he's injured, and that generic information and why he's not coming. So you're right on the levels of that, is that he should at least know the bare knuckle minimum of this physical ailment. I mean, you can't call it that. I mean, that's just something that shows you don't know what's going on, and that this is kind of made up on the fly and the stories aren't really put together very well. But I mean, we're cutting it close here with time, and I know that I don't want to run long on this, but I think me and Jim might have to part two this, and that might be coming to you guys on Thursday, so that way we can give some space and let you guys enjoy Channing. But I'll leave you with this, and I'm going to throw this out there rhetorically because I don't want you to answer it immediately, Jim, because me and you are going to jump on this like, you know, fresh meat in front of a dog. But at this point, I think this is going to kind of be part two when we get to this. is this the time for Robert Sarver to hit the reset button? I mean, is this the perfect storm of we've been making all the wrong decisions and we don't know what's going on. We hit the reset button a couple of years ago halfway. Now do we need to fully hit the reset button and clean it down from Babbie down to players that don't belong here and then rebuild it all the way up? Because Babbie's, you know, right above blanks and just kind of rebuild it all the way up. It's a tough question and a tough decision to make, but I'm curious how much that has gone through the head of Robert Sarver over the past 96 hours.
Yeah, I won't answer it now like you had said. That's what we can get into here is the potential for a full reboot and whether that might be the best approach right now or not.
Yeah, and we're not going to preview this upcoming week, which is basically Sacramento here tonight on the road. Best chance the Suns have of a win, but it's still on the road against a divisional opponent with all this hoopla going on. So, you know, watch out for that game tonight. As well as last week, you know, 0-2 is 0-2. Check out Bright Side of the Sun. We've been covering this with, I called it before, we've been ferociously covering it with just amazingly quality content from the second the Bucks game ended all the way up until today with everything that's been going on. So make sure you're backtracking and go back through and look at that timeline. But for Jim Kochenour, Chris Habas, we'll be talking to you very, very soon in part 2. Enjoy Sacramento tonight.